And a call to order the conference committee on House File 183. We're going to get started given the short time frame. The Senate's going in at 9, so we're just going to spend a half hour doing a side-by-side and taking some testimony. Then we're hoping, dependent on how long House and floor session goes, to reconvene this afternoon as well. So with that, we decided that whichever council showed up first got to do the side-by-side, and Ms. Pontius won the honor this morning. So if you would just briefly go through the bill. It's not very lengthy, and the differences are pretty limited, but we'll start with the side-by-side. Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, thank you. Could we just very quickly do a little bit of housekeeping and have at least staff introduce themselves for
Certainly.
The benefit of the audience? And also just to let everyone know, we're on TV this morning, so that's that secret signal you give to say hello to your mom. Be sure to do that.
Senator Limmer.
Well, I'm Warren Limmer. I'm a state senator from Northwest Hennepin County, namely Maple Grove, Osseo, and Rogers.
Right, thank you.
And Dayton. Can't forget those people.
Thank you.
I'm Ted York, Legislative Assistant to Senator Dibble.
Thank you.
Suzanne Thabatka, I'm the Committee Administrator for Senator Dibble.
Thank you.
I'm Kathy Pontius, Counsel for Senate Judiciary Committee.
Scott Dibble, State Senator of Minneapolis.
All right. Representative Hillstrom.
Deborah Hillstrom, Representative from Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park.
Matt Gehring from House Research.
Emily Leffoltz, the Committee Administrator for the Civil Law Committee in the House.
Right, thank you. And Mary Liz Holberg, State Rep from Lakeville. Ms. Pontius.
Madam Chair and members, we're working off the side-by-side on R1. The first difference, obviously, is the Senate Section 1, which is not in the House bill. And as I recall, this was something that was added in the Judiciary Committee last session. And basically, it amends the general law dealing with access to data by an individual to say that the individual does have access to the names of persons who have gotten access to their private data, unless it would reveal the identity of an undercover law enforcement officer or our active investigative data. That's not in the House bill. And then the rest of the page is identical on both sides. And this is a requirement that responsible authorities establish data protection procedures, in particular making sure that only individuals whose work assignment have a need to know sort of basis can get access to the data. And then on R2, the first part on the breach of security of data, like in computer systems, and which was originally sort of a what you might think of as a computer hacking statute. And both bills basically expand this law, first of all, to apply to all government entities and not just state agencies, and to also add more requirements in there. And the first difference on R2, if you look on the Senate side on 3.11, this is the notice to the individual who's the subject of data that's been breached. The Senate requires that it be written. And then down at the bottom of R2, if you look at the House side on 2.34 and 2.35, where there's a report requirement in both bills, but the House includes a reference to exhaustion of all rights of appeal under applicable collective bargaining agreements. That's not in the Senate language. Otherwise, they're identical. And then on R3, on the top there, there's a number of, a lot of it is just stylistic differences in terms of what's in the report. For example, if you look at on 3.4, some of them, though, are substantive, so I'll try to point those out. And then if Mr. Gehring misses notices anything, let me know. If you look at 3.4 on the House side, it states that if disciplinary action was taken against an employee, then various things have to be included in the report. And if you look on the Senate side, it refers to if there is a final disposition of disciplinary action as that's defined under the personnel data statute. And that clause is not in the House language. And then also on the Senate side, if you look at 3.31, if disciplinary action was determined to be unnecessary, the specific findings and reasons for that determination is in the Senate bill. And then also on the Senate side, starting on 3.33, there are publication requirements for the final report that are not in the House bill but are in the Senate bill. That goes down to 4.3. And then on R4, there's just effective date differences, given the fact that the House passed the bill last year and the Senate passed it this year. So the 2013, it's 2014, excuse me, in the Senate language. And then on the bottom of R4, Section 4, is the Cybers Amendment that is in the House language but not in the Senate language. And the actual language itself is on R5 at the very end, under which the name of each law enforcement agency that submits data to cybers has to be included. And that's not in the Senate bill.
Thank you. And Ms. Pontes, do you know, has the Senate passed any cybers language in other bills? This was a recommendation of the legislative auditor when they did the law enforcement's use.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I know there is some cyber slangs. I haven't tracked this specific paragraph down, so I couldn't tell if you're sure. I can look into it and see if it shows up anywhere else.
Okay. All right, thank you. Mr. Gehring, did you have anything you wanted to add? Are there any questions at this point? All right, thank you. I know that there's a number of people that would like to testify on this, so if anybody would like to come forward and testify with any concerns or support, this time we'll try and get about 20, 25 minutes of testimony in this morning and then see how much left there would be to do. Thank you and welcome to the committee. You'll state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Bo Bernson. I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties.
And Patrick Hines with the League of Minnesota Cities.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you very much for allowing us to testify today. We also want to thank the bill authors for their work with us over the past year on this bill, as you made several modifications at our request, and we do appreciate that. We do want to speak specifically to two issues today, showing our interest in the House provision on two issues. The first is Section 1 of the Senate bill states that an individual has the right to know the identity of an employee who accesses private data on that individual, even if the access is lawful. We are extremely concerned about the unintended consequences of this provision. This language could expose government employees who may be required to access non-public data as part of their regular job duties to the possibility of threats or other retribution from disgruntled clients, such as individuals whose wages are being garnished for child support. Additionally, for much of the non-public data maintained by government entities, there is no current system for tracking employee access, meaning this language may create an unrealistic expectation for information government entities simply do not have. This provision was removed from the bill on the House floor, and we would urge conferees to adopt the House position on this provision. You want to talk about
that? Thank you. Madam Chair and members, the other provision that we had concerns about, which is also outlined in the letter that we provided to the conference committee members, is on page R3 of the side-by-side. It's lines 3.33 to... wait, is it? No, that's not the right thing. My apologies.
It is 3.33.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Excuse me, it is on page R3.33. It's the Senate provision that requires disciplinary action against an employee who had unauthorized access to private data to be posted onto the website of the city or a county. That provision is not in the House bill. We think as a human resources management, that's not a good practice to have to put someone's name out on a public website, essentially shaming them for the disciplinary action that was taken. The report is already public data. The bill would require that report to be given to the person whose data was accessed, and any member of the public could access it. We just think that additional step of putting it out on a city or county website is unnecessary, and it's not something that our HR professionals would support doing. So we would respectfully request that the conference committee adopt the House position on that.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the testifiers? I have a couple. In some of the discussions that we've had with people that are opposing sections of the bill, one of the things we frequently hear is that we don't have the ability to track this access, that our systems aren't able to conform to the standards in the bill because they're not built that way. From what I have learned around these issues, that in the private sector, it's pretty much standard operating procedure to have audit trails in these systems, and it's a basic security protocol, if you will, to have systems that are able to track users of information for accountability purposes, et cetera. Can you let the committee know or tell us to what degree these systems are unable to provide that information, and moving forward, if we were to look at some kind of time frame for computer systems to be required to have this component, what would be a reasonable time frame for compliance?
Madam Chair and members, on that point, I would point out that much of the bill was drafted in response to the Driver Vehicle Services database, and that is a system that can be audited and users can be tracked. But the bill addresses all types of non-public or private data that a city might maintain, and that could include very routine private data like recreational data or email lists that are used when you send out snow emergency notices. And especially in smaller communities, it's probably not even accurate to say that there's a system in place. It could be that you have a spreadsheet that has people's email addresses, and you know, different employees might access that in order to send out a notice. So one of our concerns is that the scope of the language applies to types of data that I don't think we've really been discussing in the context of a system. In terms of assuming that there are more robust databases like the Driver Vehicle Services one, I don't know how long it would take for every community who had, you know, those type of databases to get to a point where it could be audited. I know that there are systems that are going to be closer than others, especially in larger communities, but I couldn't give a time frame.
Thank you. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you, if I give you an example, can you tell me if the data would be available because of lines 1.19 to 1.22 on page R1 of the Senate language? So sometimes you have contested situations of guardianships or conservatorships where the county believes that a vulnerable person is in need of some emergency assistance or coming in. And many times they're contested by the person who doesn't want to have that guardianship or conservatorship placed over them. Would the person who is subject to that be able to get the names of anybody who accessed the data, that private data of that vulnerable person, by name or just by that the county looked at it or that it was a county social services worker? Would they get the specific name or just the agency?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you referring to under the provision, if the provision in the Senate bill were enacted? Is that what you're referring to?
Representative Hillstrom.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My reading of it, it would be, has access to the name of persons who have obtained access to private data, so they'd be able to receive the name of the, by my reading, would receive the name of the government employee who accessed their data.
Representative Hilsman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could ask a question of the Senate author, is it your intention that in cases where they're accessing data legally, that that the person who is the subject to that data be given the specific name of the specific person that's working on that data?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hilstrom, this provision was brought in by amendment in Judiciary Committee by Senator Ortman, and it's a piece that I don't fully understand, to be quite honest with you, and what exactly her intention is. I can give you a little bit of background about what brought this piece to us, if that helps. So the backstory is that Sheriff Stanek had on several occasions asked for information about how often his driver's license data was accessed. And it turns out that over a period of several years, it has been accessed many, many times by individuals in local police agencies, for reasons that remain a mystery. He was understandably not happy about this, and can't imagine why there's so much interest in his driver's license, people viewing his driver's license data. And he asked for the names of the individuals at these departments from the departments, and then subsequently, I believe, from the Department of Public Safety, and was declined. And so he requested, testified in favor of this provision, and requested this amendment be offered, which was by Senator Ortman, so that in a circumstance like that, he could find out who exactly these individuals were who were accessing his data. That's about the extent of my familiarity and knowledge with with this. So, even though I'm the author of the bill, I apologize that I can't speak fully to its intent.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that in those circumstances that you would want to get the name. I can think of many other instances that are hotly contested issues surrounding child support, surrounding cases of investigation of child abuse and neglect that may not be criminal but may be more on the civil side after the criminal side is taken care of, and whether or not children should be removed from the home. And while those things are going on, the ability to the ability to get the specific name of the person who collected the data about you that may result in something really bad happening to you. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that we think through all of those pieces and know what the ramification of that might be.
Thank you. Any additional questions for the testifiers?
May I ask a question?
Certainly. Senator Scherer.
I don't know who can answer this question. Senator Dibble or anyone, in terms of this particular provision about identifying who did the breach, how do you apply, is there other language here, I cannot remember, that how do you apply the capacity to hold someone accountable for what is indicated earlier, which is that there have to be policies and procedures that include access to the data, if sharing of the data with other government authorized by law, and that it only be accessed for whose work assignment reasonably requires that access. So is the access to the name of the person who is pursuing this information, if that's not available in that process, how do you carry out the responsibility of oversight?
Senator Dibble.
First, I'm not sure if this is a part of your question, but in case it is, I'll cover that. Section 1 does not confine itself specifically to a data breach. It's any instance of access to someone's name, except in those instances when it's the function of an investigation, et cetera. To answer your second question, that's not entirely clear. If it's of course difficult to apply a consequence if in fact a data breach has occurred, if you don't know who actually committed the breach. But that's the challenge and the responsibility that we put to these units of government to figure out how to better track who's accessing data, A, and B, making sure that they're accessing data only in the function of their job responsibilities for the task at hand. So we don't get into a lot of detail about that, but we ask or we tell units of government that they need to establish some form of procedure to figure that out. That's kind of the heart of the bill, really, to say we need to start keeping better track of who's accessing this data and making sure they're doing it for the right reasons in carrying out their duties and responsibilities only. Doesn't matter that they're on the clock and they have a right to use the data. Even when they're using the data, they need to be doing it for job-related mm-hmm. purposes.
Senator Sharon.
If I understand what we're struggling with, then it is a requirement that a process be established so that you can be certain that people are accessing data for the appropriate purposes.
Senator,
that's the first part of it. And then the second part is the release. Who do you release that information to? Do you release the name of the person who did the breach to the person who has had the breach? Is that...
Senator Sharon, are you talking about the data subject?
Yes.
Yes. Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, yes. I mean, that's... In the instance where there has been a violation, yes.
And Senator Sharon, this bill came as a result of the DNR situation in which that particular situation was not brought to light because of any protocols with DPS about the use of their database, but rather another investigation where it was inadvertently discovered. This and so some of us were very skeptical that the processes in place were sufficient if you couldn't recognize somebody that was looking up records to that extent. If that wasn't flagged, then you know what was being flagged. And even as recently as last week, KSTP did a report about a Metro Transit employee looking up over 7,000 records. We've also heard from a lobbyist who's working in support of the medical marijuana issue, which of course is in contrast to law enforcement's position on that issue, and a recent inquiry into that person's records showed dozens of lookups across the state in areas in which this individual never even visited, some of them at 3 o'clock in the morning. So it's pretty clear, at least to me and others, that we still don't have some groups taking this issue seriously, and that there's plenty of room for improvement in public policy to try and push them along a little bit, if you will. Yeah. Senator Sharon.
Yeah, I understand the context out of which this is being developed and its importance. And I understand that subdivision 5 language is specifically directed towards establishing a process to interrupt just what you're describing. But it seems to me there's a second question here, which is language 1.19 through 1.22. And that's the language about the release, whether or not you release the name of the person upon request, to the extent the data are maintained by the government, an individual has access to the name of the persons who have obtained access to private data. That's the subject that we're talking about here, I think. And so my question was, as I look at that, if I've had a data breach, I have the if this language were adopted, I would have the right to know who breached the data.
And Senator Sharon,
correct.
That's correct, unless it was part of an active investigation or would identify an undercover law enforcement.
Right. And so I'm trying to understand, this was Senator Ortman's amendment, what you're saying is the problem that can be created by that language. Would you repeat that to me?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Sharon, this language says even if it's not a data breach, so even if you access it as part of your day-to-day regular operations and the government wants you to be looking at that data as part of your job, the person who is the subject of that data then could get the name of the person. So if it's your job to go and look at how much money someone makes for the purposes of calculating child support, they're in court, it's a regular part of the day-to-day operation, the person who accesses that information's name specifically would be made available to the person whose data was looked at. And so the question is distinguishing between people who are breaking the rules and are doing things that aren't supposed to be doing it and the people that are doing the very difficult tasks that we are charging them with doing, maybe investigating a child abuse case for civil removal, maybe looking at vulnerable adults for guardianships or conservatorships, and actually having to look at the data to find out whether or not it's appropriate. Those kinds of issues, should the subject get the specific name of the person who's doing it. For example, the Public Defender's Office last year, we gave them access to look at the records of people who would be witnesses in a case. If they're on probation, they can get access to the probation records. So this would mean that the person who's being looked at would have access to the specific name of the person that looked at that data about them while that's happening, unless it's part of a criminal investigation. So I'm concerned about when it's not a breach, when it's part of the day-to-day operations of their government job that they're supposed to be doing it, that the person gets a specific name of who's doing it. That's one of the questions.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just affirm what was just reported by Representative Hillstrom. And I'll also just point out on page R3, if in fact there has been a breach and an investigation ensues and the investigation confirms that a breach occurred and disciplinary action is taken, then the name of the individual who did commit the breach, that name is disclosed in those instances. So yeah, Section 1 occurs outside of the instance of a breach. In the instance of a breach, and there's a process that ensues, and a determination is made, and disciplinary action is taken, then individuals' names are disclosed in that instance.
All right, Senator Dibble, it's almost 9 o'clock. I will take your direction on whether or not you want to take more testimony this morning, or if you want to recess at this time.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Take the sense of the Senate. We convene at 9. I think we go out for caucus right away. What is your wish?
Should we wait till they call us and then just head over there?
Yeah, we are waiting for a text notice when we go in. When we go in or when we go out?
That'll be coming in about 2 minutes.
I think it will be on time.
Yeah.
Wow, that'll be the first time.
So we're going to get a text notice of when we break for caucus. Do you want to go until then?
That'd be fine with me.
All right.
All right, well, continue then. Anybody else like to testify? I'm sorry. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We just have caucus as well, so.
And so are you willing to stay a little longer, or are you dying to get to caucus?
I am. I just have two bills I have to present, so at some point I'm going to have to leave.
Okay.
Well, an amendment.
All right. We'll follow through a little bit, but let me know when you decide if you've had enough and have to leave. Anybody else like to testify? I'm sorry, Senator.
Madam Chair, while we're on the subject, on page one, Senator Ortman's amended lineage to the bill on 119 through 122, we're talking about, this discussion had talked about the unintended bad consequences that it could occur, but I think Senator Ortman is trying to prevent bad consequences if someone is repeatedly looking into someone's records and not having an ability to track who is doing it. I could see where Senator Stanek or any other law enforcement officer could have their records followed.
Stanek.
What did I say?
We won't repeat it.
At least you could call
I've had a real Senator. Severe head cold, Madam Chair. Still suffering from that. I think there could be some very severe consequences if a law enforcement officer who had access being probed into his background without having an ability to track or to determine who that might be, that also could be some severe activity. Where do we find the balance point is probably what we need to discuss. And I can certainly see where you could have either disgruntled employees in other agencies, you could have people that are more directly tied into a more criminal element or a friend of or an accomplice of someone in the criminal world who wants to find out more detailed information on a law enforcement officer. Having that information to track who and what pattern is being developed could be very critical to the safety of a law enforcement officer or their family. And so I think Senator Ortman is trying to first broach the subject that an individual should have a right to know who's digging into their records. Now, some may be perfectly fine, legal, appropriate, but there are others who are within the system who could take tremendous advantage of it and use it for a less than virtuous purpose. And so I think we need to find, as I stated before, a balance on this lineage rather than just a black or white yes or no.
And Senator Limmer, for those that have come to me and said that they don't like the Senate Section 1, I have challenged them to provide us with an alternative. And so we're not going to finish today. No. We're going to take testimony, and we're hoping that all the great minds in this room that care about this issue might be able to come up with some kind of compromise that would build more accountability into our system without stifling the ability of public employees to do some of the very important work that they have to accomplish. We don't want a situation where we put in language where it would have a chilling effect on people trying to just do their job and their ability to access information. So with that, welcome to the committee, Ms. Frazier. If you'd like to state your name and your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Beth Frazier, the Deputy Secretary of State. And my concern is also with Section 1 and the language requiring that the name of the employee who has looked at data be disclosed. And our concern has to do with Safe at Home. And as you know, that's an address confidentiality program for people who are in very dangerous situations. And in other states, the staff of the program themselves have been stalked or have been followed because they are some of the few people in the world that know where the program participants are. So we've gone to great lengths to protect the staff that work for our program here, and would like an exemption if you're going to include some of this language, like there is for undercover law enforcement or active investigation data for Safe at Home staff, because all program data is private data. And so if somebody wanted to know who is in the program, they could apply to the program. Even if their application wasn't accepted, we would then have data on them, and then they could ask, well, who's seen my data, and find out the names of the people running the program. So that was our request, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Frazier. Any questions? All right, thank you. Thank you. Anybody else? Anybody that can't come back this afternoon? Mr. Gemberling.
Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record.
You bet, Don Gemberling. You talked about great minds in the room. I'm in the room. I'm not so sure I'm a great mind in the morning. So just a couple of things I wanted to point out to you that may cause confusion later on. As some of you know, I spent a lot of my career training government employees on how to comply with the Data Practices Act. The Senate language refers to not disclosing the name of an employee who's breaching data if there's an active investigation going on. The question I have is, there are actually at least three kinds of active investigations contemplated by the Data Practices Act. And so I'm not sure which one you're talking about, okay? There is criminal investigations under 1382. There are civil investigations under 1339. And there's some kind of special welfare investigation under the welfare data section. So if you mean to conplay all of those, then you might want to clarify that. Okay, what was the other one I had? In the House language on R2 in line 2.35, you talk about a report being done upon the completion of rights of appeal under a collective bargaining agreement or other law, okay? Mm-hmm. You actually faced a similar kind of issue back after the Annandale case in the late 70s when you were trying to figure out when disciplinary data about employees should become public. And the problem with the Annandale case is it set up a scenario where if anybody, any public employee could sue any time about something, arguing age discrimination or whatever, that you would have no final disposition until everything was done with that possibility under an other law, including appealing it all the way to the United States Supreme Court, okay? So you may be creating that kind of dilemma with that language, okay? I understand what you're trying to do, but I also think you might be doing something you don't want to do, okay? And it is a very parallel issue to the handling of personnel data currently in the Data Practices Act. On page R3, the House language says the report on line 310, the report must not include data that are not public under other law. Remember, you have the cookie language that's part of the issue, and you might want to make sure if you adopt that provision that you deal with that so that doesn't come up again and bite you. And I think that's two more things. To give you some historical kind of context, and this is in response to some of the testimony you heard earlier, since 1980, Minnesota law has required that all government entities in this state develop and establish procedures to assure that only those people within a government entity whose work assignment reasonably requires access get access to either private or confidential data. So I'm always troubled when I hear people say, we can't figure out who's getting access to private or confidential data because we don't have a system for tracking it, when that has been a legal requirement for now 40, my math is right, I'm never any good at math in the morning either, 34 years? Yeah, 34 years, okay? The other possible problem that I see in as your discussion is developing is, if you focus on the breach as a triggering point for the data subject finding out who breached their data, if you don't have systems in place to know who gets legal access to data, how are you going to know if people are breaching access? Okay? And to me, this is the larger problem that many of you have heard me talk about too often, which is the ways we enforce the statute need to be improved. I'm not sure how exactly, but this is just another example, because if you have something that's been required for over 30 years and they're still not doing it, I think you have a much larger problem. Okay, I testified in the Senate that if a government entity doesn't know, it isn't keeping track of who's getting access to the data within the entity, then you have an ongoing problem because you don't know who to go after to say, wait a minute, you're not supposed to be doing this kind of thing. When I used to train government entities, you know, the easy parts of training them were those situations where you could say, you know, if you do this, this is the evil thing that will happen to you, okay? The best example I can give you of that is in the old days, public safety had a fairly high premium on the fact that they didn't want local law enforcement agencies getting access to their data and kind of developing businesses on the side and selling the data. And that was largely because it cut into their revenue stream. Okay? As a matter of fact, there was a Lakeville police chief, I remember right, who got caught doing that. No reflection on Lakeville, Representative Holbrook. So when I trained on that issue, I could say to law enforcement people, and I trained lots and lots of them, what's going to happen to your agency if you let somebody improperly access driver's license and motor vehicle data is you're going to get cut off. You're just going to get cut off. That's what public safety will do to you. Okay? And that will make it very difficult to do your job out on the street. Okay? So don't mess around with it. And typically I'd be kind of looking at the audience at that point and I'd see people making lots of notes, whereas before they maybe hadn't taken any notes at all. So those are some issues I see with what's in the bills. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Gemberling? All right. Thank you. Ms. Beyer-Kapinski? Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Lori Beyer-Kapinski with the Department of Administration. Mr. Gemberling raised the one issue around the language in Section 1 at R1.22 around active investigative data. After the language was offered by Senator Ortman and adopted, we were in contact with her to raise the issue of, did you mean for this to be any civil and criminal investigative data? And she said yes, and she was aware of it and did not want a fix to narrow that language just to criminal investigations. So I just wanted you to be aware that at least the author of the amendment is aware of that, and that was her intent.
All right, any questions for Ms. Beyer-Kapinski? All right, thank you for that. Anybody else would like to testify this morning before we go into recess? Okay, does anybody want to testify this afternoon? Or are we going to adjourn? Nobody else wants to testify on this language.
Does anyone care what we do?
Okay. That's an invitation to show hands so we know how much testimony we'll have this afternoon. So. Throw your hands now, or else we're not going to call for public testimony later. Sorry, Madam Chair.
That's just fine. I think just to keep our options open, we'll go into recess and watch for a notice posted on the committee website on whether or not, if and when, we'll be this afternoon. So with that, the committee's in recess. Thank you.